Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along.
Welcome to the Baseball Trade Deadline Show. Seth Kamens is in the car. Sean Palmer here. We are both here on a 3 o'clock, July 31st, special trade deadline show. Well, it wasn't supposed to be the special show because yesterday I was stuck in an airport, basically for 12 hours. Got in at 2:45 this morning. Not very happy with the weather, but it seems like Seth is going through the weather right now that encapsulated the whole East Coast yesterday. Good morning, or good afternoon, Mr. Kamens.
Good afternoon, sir. Happy birthday, Morgan. Woohoo! You made it to one. So Daddy's trying to get home for you, but we're gonna be stuck for a while.
Better yet, congratulations to Mama and Papa Kamens, who made it through 1 year of Morgan Kamens. I think congratulations for making it through 1 year of two kids. You only have 15 more years of that to go.
There you go.
Until
and
they're
then,
out of
then the drinking, then the drinking can commence for all parties
well,
involved.
Well, then the drinking. Yeah, that's definitely true. I did my share of that last night. After you get bumped off of a flight, I was supposed, ladies and gentlemen, I was supposed to come back on Monday after having a tremendous weekend in London. Cheerio. And congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Tonks. Tremendous wedding in London. Get back on Monday. Get back Sunday night. Monday I was supposed to fly out. And my plane is delayed for 3.5 hours. So I was like, all right, so I'm not going to try and fly in and get in at super early in the morning on Tuesday morning. I'll push it and take the 4 o'clock flight on Tuesday, figuring that would be easier. My flight gets canceled 30 minutes before it was supposed to take off. So that was fun on Tuesday. And last night I got in at 2:45 in the morning. So to say I am wired, to say I am tired, would both be a good explanation of why you're hearing me the way you are. But that being said, it is one of my favorite times of the year in that it's the baseball trade deadline. But if you're a Mets fan, you're kind of perplexed. If you're a Yankee fan, I assume you're perplexed. I'm not one of those. Because, yes, the Yankees are in first place, Seth. But the way they're constructed right now, I can't see them making it out of the first round with that starting pitching. They don't have anybody they can rely on.
No, they don't. The staff has become very questionable very quickly. And we don't know when Severino's coming back. Paxton's been a disappointment. Sabathia's hurt. Hap has been not great. It's the question is, and it's been the million-dollar question for a while, are they willing to trade Clint Frazier, one of their stud prospects, to get a Robbie Ray, a Madison Baumgartner, a Syndergaard, whoever it may be, and is it worth it for them? In the short term, it would be, but in the long term, would it be?
Well, when you're the Yankees, and you and I have discussed this many a time, the thing that so in Major League Baseball, there's no salary cap. You can spend as much as you want. Now, granted, there's a luxury tax. The Yankees really don't care about that. Neither do the Red Sox. But the fact is, you have the ability to reload based on money, not necessarily based on players. You can just go out and get more if you want. You can take on a bad contract in order to get more prospects. You can pay down a guy's salary in order to make a good trade. The Yankees have done this over and over and over again. And what's the term that they said in Toronto this year when they lost Kawhi Leonard? Flags fly forever. And for the Yankees, who haven't been to a World Series, and I was actually surprised when I read this, although when I went back, it made sense.
It's got to be close to 10 years.
Yeah, a decade. I mean, this is the longest that they've been without a World Series since 1991. So, I mean, you're looking at 26, 27 years. This is the longest time without even being in a World Series, let alone winning a World Series. And right now, the way that they are constructed, I don't see any way that they win a World Series. I'm not really sure if they get a Robbie Ray or if they get a Madison Baumgartner, they're not getting Syndergaard. The Mets are not making that trade. Like, that's never going to happen, ever. So if they get one of those two guys, does that get you over the hump? I think that's what Cashman is basically thinking. Right, that's what he's going through right now is, all right, so I give up Clint Frazier, and I give up that prospect at single A who's dominating. But even if I get this one guy, even if I get this one starter, does that win me a World Series? And I don't think it does. I don't think it gets him anywhere close. So you are the epitome of, what is it, the 1996 Seattle Mariners, where you would have one pitcher, and that's it. Yeah, and the rest would be Jamie
Moyer. Our pitcher's not Randy Johnson.
Right, exactly. Bingo. So I don't think you're going to see the Yankees make a trade. I don't think they're going to get one of those starters. First of all, I don't think any of those starters are available. I don't think Bob Gardner is available. I don't think the best that they can hope for is a Zach Wheeler, which, again, I don't think the Mets are making a trade with the Yankees. Or they're looking at a Robbie Ray. And Robbie Ray, yeah, he throws gas. But he also walks a whole lot of people. And he gives up a whole lot of homers. And Yankee Stadium is the one place where you're not looking to give up homers, because they go out. So the trade deadline, I believe, is at 4 o'clock. We've seen some trades go forth today. One of them being Tanner Roark just went from the Cincinnati Reds to the Oakland Athletics. And that piggybacks that in the biggest trade so far in a three-way deal where Tyler Trammell, a top 30 prospect, goes to San Diego. San Diego trades Familio Reyes, who is 24 and has been hitting bombs but has no position. He goes to Cleveland. Cleveland also gets Yasiel Puig and a couple of other smaller prospects. And Trevor Bauer, the guy that the Yankees probably should have been in, goes over to Cincinnati. And you and I talked about Cincinnati at the beginning of the year, how we were intrigued but didn't think they had the juice to make it. They're 5.5 out of the playoffs right now. They have the second-best ERA without Trevor Bauer. They're loading up. I mean, they're loading up for a run. I'm not sure the run is in them, though. But a very interesting trade.
Now, I'm surprised they traded Puig, because obviously they're going to need him for their Battle Royals with the Pirates over the next couple of months. If anyone saw what happened last night. Did you see what happened, or have you just heard the stories?
Oh, no, I've seen what happened. It was definitely a interesting battle royal to begin with. 100%. Yeah, I mean,
I don't get it.
If you look at, yeah, so Puig goes, along with his upcoming suspension, goes over to Cleveland. Cleveland's got a lot more power in their lineup right now, and they're hoping that Corey Kluber, who the reigning Cy Young Award winner, not reigning, sorry, 2 years ago, Cy Young Award winner, is coming back next week. And they're hoping that he takes the spot of Bauer and continues on their merry way with Mike Clevenger and a couple of others in their staff. I think it's a good risk for Cleveland to take in the fact that they're just basically shoving out Bauer, who they would have lost in 2 years, and gotten some good power. But Cincy seems to just like shuffling the deck. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. They're probably not going to make the playoffs. And the question is whether they can trade Bauer next year, perhaps, and get a prospect of Tyler Trammell's pedigree.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't they only about three back in the Central?
The Minnesota
team that really has still has is it five now?
Oh, you're talking about Cleveland. Cleveland is three back in the Central. Yes. Yes, sir.
So I would certainly not write them off against a Minnesota team with a lacking pitching, to say the least.
No. I wasn't writing them off. I was writing Cincinnati off.
Gotcha. Yeah. For Cincinnati, it's interesting in regards that they got a solid pitcher. And I'll be honest, I don't know the depth of the prospect that they gave up. But it just seems like a strange trade. Of all the things that Cincinnati needs, that would not have been at the top of my priority list.
No, like I said, it seems like to me that they're just spinning their wheels. And they're just trading for the sake of trading, trying to make the team interesting. And that's exactly what they're doing. Now, whether that works or not is a totally different story. But as I said before, they are eight out of their own division. And I believe they're 5.5 out of the wild card. And like six teams. Hold on, I got the stats right here.
Yeah, like a 9-team.
Yeah, they got to jump a ton of teams. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They're ninth. They're 6.5 out of the wild card. They even have to jump the Mets and the Padres. So.
Exactly.
And now you have the Mets, right? So the Mets make an interesting deal. And they go get Marcus Stroman. And they basically pick up the pitcher that everybody thought was going to the Yankees. And you wonder what the Mets are doing. And look, Brody, the new GM, who everybody is basically sleeping on. If they're keeping Thor, which supposedly they are right now, and they're keeping Stroman. Stroman signed through next year as well. And they're keeping DeGrom, and they're keeping Mats. And I hope they trade Wheeler, because Wheeler is a free agent after this year. But let's imagine they keep Wheeler, and then they give him a qualifying offer next year. That's the best rotation in the major league, by far. But the Mets have gone down this road before with five aces. And never done anything. So they always question what's going on with the Mets. And I think what they basically did was they got Stroman and they said, okay, the price was just too good. They gave up the number four, number six prospects in their organization. Neither one is a stud. And they said, okay, well, we can get a legitimate number three starting pitcher for the value. It's a value trade. It's not necessarily – we needed to have Stroman, but if Toronto's going to trade him for this little of value, then it makes sense for us to pick up the phone, right?
I wonder if Toronto is not willing to trade with the Yankees on this, because I cannot imagine Cashman would not have given up, again, not Delvy Garcia, not one of the two or three big ones. But I can't believe he wouldn't have given up a little bit more than this to get Stroman. I find that really surprising.
I would completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. So, hold on. I think we had a trade with – and we're going – so the Phillies are acquiring Corey Dickerson. The Diamondbacks are acquiring Zach Gelin. There have been a lot of trades in the last couple of minutes, actually. The Nationals are getting some relief help with Hunter Strickland. We talked about the Athletics were going to acquire Tanner Rourke. So basically what happened was that the Reds got Trevor Bauer and traded Tanner Rourke, Rourke being a free agent after this year and Bauer not being. And then you have the Brewers made a significant trade involved with the Giants, but it does not – it's Drew Pomeranz. It is not Madison Bumgarner. So Pomerantz has had a lot of injury problems, but Milwaukee has a shot. They're only one game out of the playoffs. They made another trade today, trading Jesus. I love the name Jesus Aguilar to Tampa Bay, and they picked up another starter. So they are loading up on pitching because their pitching has stunk, and they keep having injuries. So they keep on trying to pick up these fringe starters, not great starters, but decent major league average starters, and hoping that if you throw enough spaghetti at the wall, one of them will stick. So it's July 31st, and let me ask you, Seth. This is the first year where there's not two baseball deadlines and trading deadlines, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's nice for today, but to me, what happens after today? I mean, there was always some push in August to see about trades. There was always some news about, even if it was a high expensive player like a Justin Verlander, there was always something going on. After today, talk about dog days of August, which you always like to point out is basically your most boring time of the year because there's nothing else going on until training camp for the NFL. Do you like this July 31st deadline?
I do think there should be one deadline. So whether it's July 31st or August 31st, I would have pushed it back a little bit further. But that's just my opinion. I don't really love it or hate. I don't really have much of an opinion on it, to be honest.
See, I was all in favor of making it August 15th-ish because that gives you a little bit of both worlds. I don't really like I understand the rationale for having it this early. It's supposed to bring more people to the table. As we said before, the Reds are 6.5 games out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 teams are within 6.5 games in the National League. In the American League, it's a little bit different. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams within 6.5 games. So there's a lot more possibility to sell your fan base on if you're making trades today, as opposed to making, like, the Reds can conceivably say, can I make up 6.5 games in 2 months? Yes, you can. I'm not sure you will, but you can. And the Mariners have won 6 straight games. The Mets have won 5 straight games. That's surprising to me, but they've won 5 straight games. So you can make up games still. If you do it in late August, how many teams can really, outside of the Yankees making it up against the Red Sox, how many teams could really make up that many games in that short of a period of time? So I think that's why it is this close to the beginning of the season rather than the end of the season. So, all right, so we will monitor. Oh, I already got 12. Twitter's great for this, by the way. I'm not a big fan of Twitter all the time, but as far as getting a trade, man, this is tremendous. So it looks like the Braves are nearing a deal for Shane Green. This is all according to Major League Baseball rumors. Shane Green, the closer for the Tigers. The Dodgers are acquiring Jed Gurko from the Cardinals. One of my favorite names in sports. Jed Gurko, G-Y-R-K-O. Plays second and third. And is a legitimate 20 to 30 home run guy. The Dodgers are the most interesting team of all because right now they could coast home. I mean, they are so far ahead of everybody else. They are 15 games ahead of the San Francisco Giants. Like, this would take a 1978 basically snooze for the Giants to make up 15 games. But as constituted, Seth, do you see the Dodgers as a prohibitive favorite in the West? in the National League. I don't see them as prohibitive favorites.
Not really.
I see them as favorites. Right. I mean, you have Roy Gin as a number one. You got Kershaw as a number two. But you really don't – I mean, Kent Maeda could be your number three. But Kenley Jansen is your closer, but not really great. You're riding Bellinger. You have a lot of talent on that team. But they've never really put it together in the playoffs. And as we said last week –
They went to Game 7 of the World Series twice.
That's true. Twice.
So they did. It's not like they didn't put it. This is not a Washington Capitals fold for the last 25 years.
No, agreed. You know, Agreed. But if you're telling me right now to pick. You got a 7-game series between the Dodgers and the Nationals. I'm picking the Nationals.
The problem
I
is
like
we've seen this with the Nationals. Well, yeah, of course you
right?
do. But we've seen this with Washington before.
Yeah.
And they always tend to find a way to disappoint.
I think we've come down to if you are Andrew Friedman and you have such a plethora of prospects, and it's amazing how this guy did so well in Tampa Bay and now moves over to the Dodgers and has money, and he's still winning the exact same way. He's not throwing money at all these guys. He's actually developing players. Unlike Cashman. I guess Cashman does the same thing. But unlike the Philadelphia Phillies, who have all this money and aren't doing anything and then have to sign free agents. But Andrew Friedman has built a consistent winner in L.A. and has a plethora of prospects. And the question is, does he go for it? And who's available to him? It doesn't look like it looks like Shane Green's going to Atlanta. Who are the other relievers available? Felipe Vasquez is not going anywhere from Pittsburgh. And are the Mets willing to throw in the towel with Edwin Diaz and admit failure based on the Robinson Cano deal? I don't think Brody's ready to do that just yet. I think Brody thinks the Mets could still make this based on that Stroman deal. And especially if they hold on to Wheeler. But I don't know.
Have
maybe that's
seen
just my
lineup.
Optimism coming in.
Yeah, I mean,
I've
you got McNeil, you've got Alonso. There's no reason, again, is there any reason that I'm missing to think that the lineup can get you to the playoffs? I realize the starting pitching could. Because as you said, that is a really, really solid top three, let alone forgetting about Mets and Wheeler. But you got to get hitting to get there, and they just don't have it.
Well, as I said before, it really depends. Look, we called it last week that Robinson Cano was the least valuable player in the National League, and just like irony has bespoke, he hits 3 home runs that day. I mean, we couldn't be any more wrong, at least for one day. So if Cano, and I'm not saying, look, he's not going to hit 3 home runs every day, but he's been playing better. Do they have the lineup to bash their way into the playoffs? No, but they have a starting pitching that could win 1-0 games or 2-1 games. And again, like I said before, do I think this is a optimistic feel from my head? Yes. But is it possible? Sure, it's possible. You got the best five. If this is the starting rotation, you have the best starting rotation in baseball. You have the worst bullpen next to the Nationals. But you're the best starters. Okay, so moving on from that. And as more trades come in, and remember, we said that the trading deadline is at 4 o'clock. So we will continue to monitor Twitter and anything else in looking for monitoring who's going to go where and we will keep you up to date. I'm looking right now. It doesn't look like there was any big trades in the last 5 minutes. But you never know. So, well, yeah. I mean, look. Okay, so let's move on to our question of the day, which we do every week. Well, we started again. If you were the commissioner of a sport, what is the change that you would make in order to make the sport more popular? And we've done Major League Baseball. We've done the NBA. And due to the fact that we are now in the dog days of summer, I will pose this question to Commissioner Kamens. You are the boxing commissioner. And Seth, we've talked about boxing off and on throughout the last couple of years and said how much boxing has taken a precipitous dip in ratings, precipitous dip in popularity, and more injuries are happening. And maybe that's because people are too big, as you stated before, last week actually. Or maybe medicine is better, in which people are stronger. How are you saving the sport? How are you making the sport more popular? Go.
Okay, number one, I don't think the sport needs to be saved. It is not the sport of the 1920s and 30s. It doesn't have that kind of popularity. We'll never have it again. It realistically doesn't have the greatness and the charisma that it did in the 80s with Leonard and Hagler and Hearns. But what pisses me off about boxing more than anything, and look, ESPN has just invested in it. DAZN, which is a new sports outlet, has invested heavily in it. Showtime is still doing fine with it. It was only HBO that pulled out. So there is it's not falling by the wayside. If I could do one thing, it's very simple. I would actually almost have to break it into two, but I want one champion per division. Not three champions, not the interim, and then the diamond, and then the emeritus champion. One champion, one league, whether it's or one organization. WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, whichever one it is, I don't care. It can be the ring championship. Makes no difference to me. Give me one champion per division. And have everyone else fight to get there. That's what makes it interesting to me. And then people are incentivized, and then the belts mean something. Now they're just, half the time, they're just a trinket. Has no value.
How is this any different than what it was Evander Holyfield and when it was any of these, the older generation, the Mike Tysons, right? There were still those three or four belts, but boxing was a more popular sport, right? So is that limiting the popularity?
No, what's happened is a lot of the old school boxing fans have died off. And the people who followed in the combat sports footsteps have gone to mixed martial arts. So I think what's happened is you've lost some of the boxing fans to MMA. And I don't know how you bring them back. But for me,
okay, just giving it
as a No, what were you gonna say?
No, go ahead. For you as a boxing fan.
As a boxing fan, and I am a boxing fan. I don't need to see every fight be a championship fight. I don't need the English Commonwealth Championship and the European Championship. One belt. Because then when you have these championship belts or you have these number one contender fights, they actually mean something. When there's 72 belts, it's all diluted. And you really don't know who is the best. Now, I understand there's a value, there's an intrinsic marketing value to having a belt. Champion versus champion. It's great, but that doesn't happen a lot of the time because the champions don't fight each other. So the only way to truly incentivize them for the belt to have value is to limit the number of belts that are out there.
Okay. So, just to chime in, according to the New York Post, Joel Sherman, the Yankees are out on Zach Wheeler. According to USA's Bob Nightingale, the Yankees are out on Rob Ray. Those are officially dead. Madison Baumgartner is not expected to be traded. And Brian Cashman is, according to Sherman, Brian Cashman is now focusing on bullpen arms. Which,
what?
How many guys can you have in the bullpen? Yep. Yeah, I don't get that part. But anyway, all right, so what would I do? So now I'm the commissioner. What would I do? You know where I think boxing has lost? I think boxing, so Japan will, I believe, will not have boxing in the Olympics. I don't know
that
if you knew that.
That doesn't sound right. I didn't know that.
I think that I read this. Hold on. Boxing, Olympics, Japan. They lost accreditation. Oh, no. It's back. Forget that idea. I thought it was gone. But they're back. Is boxing still in the Olympics? Yes, it's still in the Olympics. I guess. Okay. So I thought there was boxing not in the Olympics. But I would seriously do one of two things. I would either A, make the ring bigger. And I know that that may be problematic to some people because it's not all the same as it has been in the past. But the same way, Seth, as we have discussed making an NFL field bigger because people are bigger, I think the fact that a boxing ring has stayed stagnant for the same for and people have legitimately gotten bigger, so there's less room to move. That's number one. Number two, I would give the play I would give the boxers more rest. And number three, I would give the referee more discretion to stop a fight. I really have a hard time seeing Blaine. Now I'm having one. Brain bleeds. And seeing punch-drunk guys. And I know everybody wants to see a knockout, but if a guy is just stumbling and stumbling and stumbling, I'm not leaving it up to the discretion of the trainer to throw in the white towel. The fight's over. Because I'm sick of seeing the news. And granted, we get more of it because there's more of the news. There's more Twitter. There's more Facebook. We discussed this last week. But the fact is, I don't want to see boxers or anybody else dying or having to go to the hospital right away. It's a sport. It's not your life. It's not worth your life. And I know you're going to tell me that they inherit the risk, and me being an attorney, I should understand that you inherit the risk of when you go in the ring, you may not come out. I get that. Doesn't mean I like it. I'm not really sure what you can do about it other than giving the ref a little bit more discretion or putting headgear on a guy. But I'm not sure headgear solves the problem. Yeah, he won't get hit in the head, but he may die from a punch to the heart. Not really sure that solves my problem. But it may get it better. What are your thoughts on the bigger ring? I'm not sure you would agree with me on that.
Actually, I like it. I think it's logical. Every other sport has I don't want to say expanded, that's not the right word, but has evolved. And that this may be a reasonable evolution. Now, I'm actually not sure that all rings are the same, ironically. Because I think I've seen people
different
rings.
And I'm not sure it solves the problem.
No.
I mean, I'm not sure it solves the problem. It gives the fighters more space. It gives the fighters more room to maneuver. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the fighting is less.
Look, if you get hit by a Deontay, you get hit by a Deontay Wilder cross square, doesn't matter if you're in a 10-foot ring or a 1,000-foot ring, you're going down. So, you know, but I think it, I do think it would be helpful. Certainly couldn't hurt. And as you said, this is a sport more than most where there is an enormous inherent risk. So if there are ways that you can, within reason, that you can mitigate a small percentage of it, why wouldn't you do it?
Look, I'm all for it. I mean, I think people are turned off. You have your MMA fighters. You have your MMA fans. I get that. You have your boxing fans. I get that. But there's a small percentage of the, so you have, say, 100%, and you have 50-50 both MMA and boxing. And I don't think it's even, mind you, but let's go with that for now. The pie, I think the pie shrinks every time somebody dies. I think people are turned off. I think you have some people that tune in specifically for that, the same reason that people tune in specifically to see a bobsled crash or a car crash, for that matter. I think you see those people that want to see, they want the shock value. I think you have those. But I think you also have the fans that every time somebody gets seriously hurt or dies, you lose a fan or two along with that because they're saying this just isn't right. You shouldn't have this. I'm one of those guys that it would take a lot for me to watch an MMA or a boxing match at this point. I just have I don't want to see that happen. So if I'm not watching it, I know for certain I won't. I don't mind watching a Floyd Mayweather fight because I know damn well that he's never going to knock anybody out. So that's not an issue. At all. See, I thought you would laugh at that at least.
I smiled. I smirked.
Because I know that Nabate Isles wouldn't be laughing or smiling at any of the Floyd Mayweather stuff right now.
I said I smirked.
Yeah, I know.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I do well with that. So in the last 10 minutes, there have not been any more trades that I can report at this point. And there haven't been any NBA trades. So tell me, Seth, you got the next month, which is just going to be NFL training camps and baseball. Do you even watch sports for the next month?
Not really. I did watch All or Nothing, the Amazon show on Carolina. But I'll follow what's going on. I'll, you know, start to kind of get ready for college football, start to get ready for fantasy football, which I'm not there yet. I'm not there for fantasy yet. I know you said you were, but.
Well, you get an email from me like every other week about it. So, yeah, I'm there. I am eager to cash in on Le'Veon Bell finally this year, which was an interesting – he tweeted an apology a couple of days ago to all of his fantasy owners for screwing them up last year. And I took that apology to heart. I was like, now go show me. I was like, we need you. Come help. Like, I think as you get more involved with your family life, as Nabate has talked to us, he's like, I'm not really into fantasy yet. I was like, yeah, you guys got families. I was like, you guys got time. You got no time.
No,
Dina's
not pregnant as far as I know. So there's
no
difference whether you're
got married.
I'm married. Marriage?
But,
marriage is an institution. No, I mean, to me, whether you're married or living together makes no damn difference when it comes to this. It's the kids that take up all the time. So,
My hope is, about a week or two,
I'll start to get stoked.
Okay, so to give you guys a programming notes, let's just go programming notes here. We got 20 minutes to go in the show, but let's get some programming notes. So next week, regularly scheduled at the 7th, on the 6th, and then we get into our preview shows. So the 13th, we got 2 weeks. So the 6th will be regular, the 13th will be regular, the 20th will be our college football show, the 27th will be our fantasy football show, and then the 3rd will be our NFL show. Because I think most people will be drafting the week of Labor Day, which is the 31st, the 1st, and the 2nd. So we should get in our show for fantasy purposes before then. I don't know, Seth, it's interesting that I've considerably gone down in teams over the last couple of years, and now I'm considerably going up in teams. It's like been an evolution of I found the best like 3 or 4 leagues. I used to be in like 7 or 8, and you used to make fun of me, which is perfectly fine because I had every single player on every team. It was like watching TV. It was like sensory overload. I have that guy. I'm against that guy. Wait, I have that guy on 3 teams, but I'm against that guy on 2 teams. But it's become – now I'm up to 4 teams again from 2 last year. And fortunate for me, I still have the same keeper in 3 of them. James Conner will be a keeper. So I don't know why it's got me going. Maybe it's because of the warm weather and I understand that football season is upon us. And maybe it's a little bit because I'm looking forward to Syracuse football too, that I have a lot more in me. I wanted to bring up The Athletic has done a really good series. And for those that don't pay for The Athletic.
Pay for The Athletic.
I am amazed by how good some of their articles are. Look, I've been an ESPN Plus subscriber since the very first day, and they're really
it's
good.
It's not even
like
the ballpark.
It seems like all the good writers, all the writers that went, that were from these various newspapers that shut down, or just laid off people, Ken Rosenthal, Jason Stark, and even the ones for the Arthur Staple, who's an Islanders beat writer, and man, the Islanders have a beat writer? Like, that's tremendous. But the fact is, The Athletic is so well written. And I love reading the comments where they think that everybody's a homer. Like, that's just even more fun. But The Athletic has done a really good series this year on conference realignment and where we are as opposed to where we have been, right? So Syracuse moves to from the Big East. The Big Ten expands with Nebraska. And then, of course, we have Maryland. And I think we're 6 years in to this transition. I think in the 7th year, Maryland gets a full share. And they're looking back on how conference realignment changed. And I remember when Maryland moved. I remember when we had the discussion whether the Big 12 would be the Big 16, right? It was possibly the most volatile week in college sports ever because everything could have changed. And here we are 6-7 years later, and they did an article. I don't remember who wrote it, but definitely quoted numerous players and numerous personalities like LaRon Prophet and Bonnie Bernstein, who went to Maryland, and Scott Van Pelt, and over and over again. Syracuse really didn't have a choice. They went because the Big East was dying. Maryland had a choice and went for the money. And I read the article, and the article pretty much was on point where most people were still not in favor of this. But once the money comes in, maybe they will be, and that's in another year. And somebody was quoted, I don't remember who, maybe it was I can't remember who it was, but they said, give it 5 more years and nobody will even remember that Maryland was in the ACC. I'm not really sure I believe that, but at the same time, what do you think? You're an alumnus. I mean, it still rocks me that Maryland and Rutgers are in the Big Ten, even to this day.
Okay. The article was written by Seth Emerson. who I went to college with and knew 25 years ago, although I haven't seen him in 20 years, so. And he hit it on the tee. This is a very simple, what happened was very simple. Debbie Yao, who is despised at Maryland, was the athletic coordinator in the early 2000s when Ralph Regan, our beloved head college football coach, took us to an Orange Bowl, and we beat Florida State out to win the ACC. Based upon that, they almost doubled the size of, I don't want to say doubled the size, but greatly expanded the size of Byrd Stadium, the football stadium where they play. The following year, they win the NCAA title, and we have the Comcast Center. The problem being, or going from the Coalfield House to Comcast Center, the problem being, and I don't know what the thought process was, is, as the title said, it's a basketball team in a football conference. No one was paying to go to the Maryland games, so they went deeply, deeply, deeply in debt, number one. Number two, Maryland has always been the second-class citizen in the ACC. This is not debatable. This is not subjective. This is a fact. Whoever was not Duke or North Carolina was not at the top of the food chain, or was not at least not in the research triangle, was not at the top of the food chain in the ACC. The ACC basketball tournament, I believe we didn't host it for 40 years. It was that kind of thing. But the thing that held Maryland in, and where they were not thrilled but could stay happy, was they had this rivalry. And I realized Duke didn't consider them a rival, but we considered Duke a rival. Like, Virginia considered us a rival, we didn't consider Virginia a rival. That was the way it was. But once they bring in Pittsburgh and, pardon my French, bring in Syracuse. Now, Syracuse and Maryland, I can kind of understand because it's a very similar student body, just private versus public school. But when you designate rivalries of Pittsburgh, we don't give a flying bleep about Pittsburgh. So the rivalries, for all intents and purposes, are going by the wayside. We don't feel particularly respected, never have. We are in debt up to our bidding, and we're offered the opportunity to go into a conference that within 10 years will take us out of the red and into the black, and better academically and better in a lot of other sports than the ACC, it made sense. And I remember having this discussion with the day it happened. I understood why they did it. I understood the value, but it still stinks. It's not, nobody cares about it. The problem is you went from being a middle tier team in the ACC, the middle child in the ACC, to the middle child in the Big 12, the Big 10. And that's sad, but true.
Is there any way for Maryland at this point to become a bigger team in the Big Ten? Because I don't see it. I don't see the geographic rivalry. I know that
the only way I see it is if Loxley does a really good job, and he's recruiting like a monster, and they beat Penn State several times in a row. The only natural rivalry in the Big Ten for Maryland is Penn State. But when they've beaten you 30 out of 32 games, it's not really a rivalry.
Look, I get it, right? I mean, you're the whipping boy in the ACC. Now you're the whipping boy in the Big Ten. And you weren't really the whipping boy in the ACC for a while. Until you lost Friedgen, or the year before Friedgen got fired.
you had a legitimate team for the first time in a very long time for football. And I'm not sure what went wrong, but something did, right? And you lost Friesian, and then you lost Gary Williams, or Gary Williams retired, or you fired him, or whatever happened. But
right.
This is a legitimate team. This is a legitimate year to me. So next year comes the money. Next year is the tipping point for the money. So you become you become fully vested in the Big Ten along with the Big Ten Network next year. Great. There goes the money. But respect-wise, in my opinion, this is a huge year for you guys. And the reasoning is you have a schedule. Look, I'm not gonna toot Syracuse's horn, but I will, because we're a top 15 team in football. You play us week two at home. You could pull off a top 15 upset week two at home and start the year great. Your basketball team legitimately is a top 15 team. If not a top 10 team, potentially.
Yes,
it's Turgeon's best team ever. And I don't say that sarcastically. It is. But in the past, when this happens, Maryland doesn't come through, right?
Agreed.
They have preseason hype. They're like the Washington Nationals. Or they're like the I'm going to keep saying Washington teams, but it's true. They're like the Washington Nationals or the Washington Capitals. It's preseason hype and postseason dismay. And that's all part of this, is the fact that it's put up or shut up time for this team, for this university, as far as sports is concerned. You have a schedule in which you can do that. Let's see you go do it. And
well,
I think that
I don't
is...
think... I think that's asking a lot from the football team. Considering you're coming off a year, you have a new coach, you're coming off a year where you had someone die, and we're in the midst of an enormous scandal. I actually think Locksley will succeed here because everyone in the DMV, which is considered the D.C., Maryland, Virginia border, Virginia area, which is a football hotbed, loves Locksley. All the high school coaches love Locksley. We just got a recruit. We beat out a recruit from Ohio State and Oregon down in Florida. The number four guy in the country who went to Alabama just entered the portal. He's expected to end up at Maryland. I think for Maryland, I don't know what the expectation is this year with so many because of some of the topsy-turviness of the last 12 months. On the basketball end, it's the second best team Turgeon has had. He had a team that was top five preseason when Rashid Solomon came in from Duke. And Tremble was the point guard, and Diamond Stone was there. And Robert Carter was there. That team was preseason top five and underachieved. Now, I'm a little bit more optimistic with this team because there's a nice meld of freshmen and sophomores and senior leadership in Cowan. We'll see what happens. But this team has also done very well in other sports. They won the NCAA soccer championship. They make the lacrosse Final Four in men's and women's every year. They've done okay. It's football. Football is the kicker, and football is what the Big Ten is built upon. I don't think you can say this year. I think you got to give them another year or so after that, because I think that's an unfair expectation for a guy coming in first season as a head coach.
Well, the expectation is that both teams do well in the same year. That's what Maryland needs. Maryland needs a full year of top sport. Because if you look at Michigan and you look at Michigan State, you're seeing teams in Ohio State, right? Which are the epitome of consistent. Those teams are year-round in the conversation. And the problem that Maryland has had, to me, maybe not to you, but to me, and the reason that they don't succeed, and quite frankly, the reason that Syracuse is now on the way back up is because it is a year-round conversation of excitement for these teams. You need to be good in both. You can't just be good in one in order to bring in the butter. And to me, that leads me to my last 5 minutes, which is right now. By the way, as of 5 minutes, with 5 minutes left in the deadline, Zach Wheeler is still a New York Met. There have been no real big trades left that have been made. Mark Melosin went from San Francisco, and his $14 million salary also went to the Braves, so they are loading up on the bullpen. The Yankees have also not made a trade. Okay, so this is the first year, well, maybe last year too, the first couple of years in two decades that I am stoked for Syracuse football. Now, that could all come crashing down if they lose to Maryland in week two. I'll tell you that flat out. But stoked. I am, and Seth, maybe that's why I'm so ready for football, fantasy or otherwise, is that this type of excitement hasn't been around the program since Donovan McNabb. And that's when we went to school, so we're looking at 24 years along.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while. And Dino is bringing the goods. And I really don't expect Dino to have, unfortunately, another kind of season, which if he goes top 10 this year, I don't think he'll be the Syracuse coach after this year.
That's what I always have.
And so it's kind of like a swing and a hit and a swing and a miss. Is if the team does really well, Dino might be in USC. And that would be horrible for me. But you can only play with today's game, not for tomorrow's game. So I am really stoked for Syracuse football. The basketball team is actually freshman only, basically. They're going to be freshmen and freshmen. But it'll be a nice surprise of Saturday afternoon looking forward to Syracuse football. And like I said before, maybe that's what's got me on the fantasy kick already, is that every day I'm looking to see what Syracuse football is doing, and I'm excited. All right, Seth, you got 3 minutes.
All right. We don't really talk about Back Sports Page anymore. As many of you know, I started it with Randy Zelia. Randy Zelia started it 9 years ago. I was kind of a co-owner for a year or two, and then faded out as business and life took over. Sean and I still have I have a very good relationship with Randy. Sean does too. Although I'm closer with him than he is. And Randy's had some unlucky breaks on a lot of things, but nothing worse than what happened on Wednesday night, where his his beloved girlfriend Sarah went into the hospital and never unfortunately came out. And she was a big supporter of him, which you have to be when you're trying to start a website from scratch, which is extraordinarily difficult. She would be a photographer for some of the games. We talk about these things and sometimes you lose perspective. And, Randy has always come from the right place. Not always done the right thing, but he's always come from the right place. And as a guy who's just kind of gone through a lot of crap over the last couple of years, this is just, an additional turn to the knife. And I was at the wake. It was not fun. And, 34-year-old with a teenager. Oof. So my truly deepest condolences to Randy, to the Gordon family, and to anyone else who knew Sarah. I mean, this is just simply heartbreaking. And I don't think there's much more that really needs to be added on that. So, for Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show from Back Sports Page. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.